another episode of the Mimosas with Moms podcast. I'm your host, Abby Williams, and to keep things as normal as possible here on the podcast, we are continuing our year of advocacy, and this month is April, so we are celebrating Autism Awareness Month, and I am so excited to welcome my friend Anne. You might know her from Instagram as the Autism Supermom. Anne, welcome.
Hello, good morning, welcome. How are you?
I'm good. So Anne, kind of tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a mom to five girls. Yeah. My youngest just turned 13. So I have a 13-year-old, a 14-year-old, a 16-year-old, and I got two adult children, now ages 20 and 22. So I got two kids in different university locations. And yeah. And three, I still call them the little kids, but not really.
If they're at home, they're little, right?
Three teenagers. And so we're just taking it one day at a time right now. It's really very sort of different times, just a little bit more challenging. We realize how much we depend upon teachers and all that kind of stuff.
I am so with you.
Routine. Yep. And we had, you know, a little bit of respite, and now it's like it's all on me. Yeah. I'm in, you know, trying to peacefully co-parent a little bit, and getting my co-parent is my respite for today.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So yeah.
How are you guys navigating your co-parenting situation right now?
It's not the best, but it's not the worst. It's right. Like we separated back in 2015, so but back then I was living a lot further away. There was more distance involved, and I guess I was more used to sort of doing more myself and making right. more of the decisions. So I kind of like the way that I'm getting more, I don't want to say more of a break, but a little bit more of a chance to get a little bit of balance back, you know. Like I feel that it all came at the right time in a way. Mm-hmm. Just having the younger kids suddenly go into puberty and all of that. And it's like, because I was for so long there, it was like I was kind of mostly dealing with the one with a lot of issues with the onset of puberty, but just having the extra kids as teenagers, then it almost seems overwhelming at times to have three of them.
In a couple of years with three going through puberty at the same time.
Oh, isn't it crazy?
You know, I'm like, there's so many positives of having them like close in age, but yeah, me and my husband already like lay in bed at night and like, what are we going to do when they're all teenagers at the same time? They're all driving at the same time. Like, that's expensive, you know? Going through all these different things of maybe we should have spaced them out a little bit better.
But then you'll have them all grown at the same time and gone.
And it is like now that the girls are getting to like ages where they're playing together, it's getting kind of easier.
Yes.
They have a buddy and it's fun to watch. So when they're not like killing each other, fun.
Oh, yes. Yes. The sibling rivalry, isn't it? I thought I was the only one. It was obviously the first two, they were very different. And the first two were only 2 years apart. And that was pretty intense at times.
Right.
And then I had Rebecca come along in the middle, and that kind of really changed things up because she needed much more one-on-one attention. And so,
and she's your child with the ASD diagnosis.
Rebecca, she has the severe diagnosis. Yeah. And I have another one a little bit younger, recently diagnosed, but completely opposite end and completely just getting used to it. So and so I'm just respecting her privacy, that she's just it's like it's a change. And so I've kind of got two that are very much opposites in like Rebecca is the one that is always wanting to be out. I have never had a child with such an extrovert. Such a right. number of people, like really sort of good for me in a way, right. sort of like, because I'm a little bit too much of a homebody. And it's kind of forced me to have to not get out of my shell, because I'm not extremely shy. It's just that I kind of just like being home and like my privacy, but yeah. it's now I have to deal with more people. I have to, you know, the school meetings and all the medical stuff and the advocating, having,
right.
and it's all been good for me in that respect, you know? Yeah. So
when did you start noticing symptoms with Rebecca?
Rebecca, believe it or not, like, she was my only easy pregnancy, which sounds
really?
Crazy.
It's, yeah,
really is. Like, it was too easy breezy. Like, I had with the first one, I had placenta previa.
Yeah.
With the second one, I had a partial placenta previa, so I was being, there was a lot more appointments, a lot, you know, being monitored a lot more closely. But with Rebecca, it was almost too easy breezy. And believe it or not, like, she was the one that was born, and I sort of had, like, I don't know if what the medical word for it, but almost the baby pinks. It was, yeah. like, I had no, you know, like, I was almost too, like, she's just too easygoing, but she never cried. Yeah. Just very smiley baby, very easy as a baby. But it did get tough as a toddler, and she, you know, as time went on, it got a little bit tougher with the extreme sort of ADHD behaviors that came in. So it got a little scary at yeah. times. And then there was a phase as a toddler, there was an alarming sort of head banging phase, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So a little bit of a predisposition for seizure activity, which we're out of the woods now. She seems yeah. to have outgrown that. So there were definitely some very challenging, very difficult times from a medical point of view. And now it's more the challenges are to do with the comorbidity, like the sort of more like the OCD tendencies, like mm-hmm. And just the need for extreme routine, I guess, which, like, I find that tough, because everything has to be so planned, you know,
right,
like
right.
you get used to it, but I do need a little, as they get older, I need more time away for myself. Yeah. And more, yeah. I need yeah. a little bit of time just to do something spontaneously, you know, for me a little bit.
I think that's completely fair. And I think, you know, as all parents, you know, we need that independence from our motherhood yes. role, and probably yes. parents, with children that have different challenges, even more so, maybe.
Yes. Like, I feel like the older they get and certain things, I think the anxiety might show in ways that don't look like anxiety, that aren't sort of what we see as being typical signs of anxiety, like, say, like more of the sort of, like hair pulling or right. or just more intense things that you might see, and it's sort of like you do need to bring in more people for support, I feel, as it
yeah.
as things get more intense with hormones, you know, having girls. I don't know if it makes a difference having girls, as I've never had the experience of having boys. So,
right.
But it would kind of be interesting to see. I got to learn more about that from the mums with boys. But I feel that with age, I feel that it does take a village to raise children, children that have like comorbidity issues or have a lot of delays still, and just need a lot of support with the daily living and with safety, all yeah. of that. So that keeps you on your toes, and you realize that, you know, you're getting older, but then you're still kind of stuck in time where you're like, unfortunately, with Rebecca's diagnosis, the intellectual disability is severe, so I still have to run the house and run things that are appropriate for her developmental age.
Right.
So I have to really be on my toes in terms of the safety, you know, road safety and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Were you able to get, I guess, interventions in place early, or was that something that you had to kind of fight for or navigate through?
Yeah, it's hard in Ontario, and I feel like we are, I think a lot of it is to do with the population issues in, you know, certain cities in Canada are very high in terms of population. And like we did do, like the diagnosis didn't come until age 3 years, 2 months, but she was picked up by a developmental pediatrician and a center that did like evaluated everything across the board at age 19 months. But with Rebecca, I did see signs of what looked like autism at around 14, 15 months. Like this was a child that wasn't really talking at all, was not really walking or attempting to walk. Like Rebecca needed physiotherapy to help with her balance and get her sort of walking and a little bit of, like, she needed everything across the board. But we did get ABA therapy, in IBI therapy to be specific, the intensive behavioral intervention. But we did some privately, which is very expensive, but and we did some private speech therapy as well. The wait list was very, very, it's still a situation, I believe, but it was really, we didn't get accepted for any therapy in Ontario until she was 7 years old. So it was almost a 4-year wait list, which was crazy, you know?
That is crazy, because I know that the wait lists here in the States are pretty long as well. I don't know if they're 4 years long.
Yeah,
but, And I think, and there's like a lot of places here locally. Yeah. And there's a lot of places here locally where I know when I was working full time as a mental health clinician, that you would kind of have to like fight them to put down certain diagnoses.
Yes.
You know, that like they don't want to diagnose autism diagnosis. And I don't know why certain providers are kind of like scared, like shy away from this, because once like you do get that diagnosis, then this whole, you know, umbrella opens up of all these different services that you qualify for.
Yes. Yes. It's very different now.
Yeah.
I feel like it's progressed a little bit in the sense that I don't want to generalize, but I feel that they are able to diagnose autism. Like in sort of when I go back with Rebecca, like it was typical that a lot of kids were being diagnosed at around 3 years old.
Right.
Now they can diagnose it a lot earlier. And
I know, because when you were saying that, like you started noticing things around 15 months, I think that's very typical.
And for like, what happened is basically I took her to the family doctor at almost age 15 months. I knew that there was like an extreme overcautiousness with sort of trying to take two steps and plonk right down.
Yeah.
And it was, and then the babbling, I would just hear like dada, and I would hear nana, but like nothing else, like at all. Like really no other words until she was almost 4 years old. Like it was very, very sort of like it's just very different, because I had the older two as a comparison, you know, I knew, and then I had my teaching practice experience. Like I'm trained in the UK up to upper primary level, and I'm not a speech therapist by any means, but I do sort of know what the milestones should be, what is, you know, and the milestones are not set in stone. They are just sort of, but it's something to, for the experts to measure, isn't it? So, but just very different.
So were you, so I think so you got into speech therapy before four?
Yes. So what happened is we were on a wait list. We didn't get into a developmental pediatrician at a special center until 19 months. So we'd already had almost 5 months waiting to get into there. And then it was like an assessment across the board. It was like a whole bunch of professionals in a room testing her. I remember a lot of the appointments because I had really bad morning sickness with Charlotte at the time, and I was like being bombarded with all these questions, you know, and she got seen for the hearing, got tested, no issues with the hearing, and it was just a multidisciplinary assessment. It was extremely thorough. I feel that the center was excellent in that way, but just a lot of kids though waiting to be seen. And then the developmental pediatrician gave her the diagnosis of global developmental delay. So that was Rebecca's diagnosis for months and months, and so she was put on wait lists for speech and physiotherapy and sensory integration therapy, like a whole bunch of occupational therapy, and she would basically get an appointment once a week, and it would be about 10 weeks, and then it would be not discharged but off onto a wait list for a while. And that was, so it wasn't consistent enough, it wasn't enough is my complaint. So before Rebecca was kindergarten age, I put her in like a speech therapy place for kids with delays, not just autism, but various speech delays. And that sort of helped her, but she's still considered to be minimally verbal. But at least nowadays, Rebecca can kind of get her point across. Like, she knows what she wants, and she can, so she has a functional language, so she can, you know, she can say if she wants juice or if she's too hot or if she's too cold. So I've really focused on just getting that sort of language out, so she's not at her age any way, shape or form. And I, you know, I've accepted that, but but there and are
it's like that positive like in, for in you the world, you know.
I think it's been really tough from the point of view of trying to balance the needs of the other siblings, you know. There was like so many years where Rebecca really, she functions like a toddler, and so she, you know, you got a kid who's playing on floors a lot and needs a lot of help with dressing, and naturally you got other kids kind of intervening wanting mom then and there, and it's kind of like that whole thing of just trying to not teach the other's patience, but trying to figure out systems of being there enough for everyone. And that's but in a lot of ways that's going to be a challenge for every mom that has more than you know, that has,
I know, because I'm like, I can identify with that.
Other than that, I feel like I feel that there's been so many years where I've just been so busy with kids stuff that it's only now that everyone's kind of a teenager that I'm starting to think that, oh, it's actually okay for me to enjoy sitting by myself and wanting to have a cup of coffee alone, you know, and wanting some, you know, to go out alone. I put myself last too much, and I feel it's a bit of a problem with a lot of moms, and especially mothers of many. It does get so crazy, and then now I'm enjoying the fact that I am getting little bits of time where I'm not always being followed into the washroom by some, you know, like, I, you know, if that makes sense.
That totally makes sense.
like it's just
Like, just not, leave not me alone for a little bit.
Yeah, like I think we're all feeling it more than ever now, because like now, like we've got the kids home so much, it's like it's a whole new level of that kind of feeling like we can't get anything done, or like the laundry never ends, honestly.
Like, I'm like, the laundry never ends. My house has not ever been as dirty as it is right now. And I'm like, what is the matter? Like, we're all home. Yes, why is nobody picking up?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, it's
you know, everyone's going through the same. So, I'm just like, I'm keeping things as simple as possible. And I've decided, like, if, you know, if there's going to be a night where everyone just eats toast or cereal or spinach pizza, I'm not going to be so stressed about cooking meals every day. Like, you got to be realistic, right? No, in totally these times, agree. Right? Yeah. It's just, yeah, we have enough stress as moms, I feel, and it's hard to know what dads are going through in this time too, right? But it's got to be hard on everyone.
Yeah, I know. For my husband, it's like a lot of anxiety right now, but he's like the working parent, and so that's just like a whole separate, you know, bag of anxiety for him. Yeah. But yeah, I think that this is like a definitely stressful time for everybody. But even more so with families that that have so many different supports that their children need, you know? So like, what is Rebecca like currently involved in now that she's older? You know, because I know that you mentioned like respite or, you know, like what kind of different therapies is she missing out on? Or are you able to continue some of them virtually, but how do you get them to like sit in front of a screen and do that? You know what I mean? It's just like a whole different barrier.
Yeah. Like it's like, we're not really, I know it sounds bad, but like Rebecca's not a child that really sits for any length of time. Like, so like she just wants to be on the move. Like you know, we've got little activities on the go. We're checking in with the teacher, but in terms of therapies, we're just doing minimal little speech activities. It's really minimal because we were just in a place where I was just delegating to others and meeting her needs where her needs are, which are basically she's telling me that she wants to be more out of the home. So she was in a good place with a little bit of an after school program a few times a week and then school, and she's in like a special school. So she really had a great routine where she was getting all her social needs met. So this has been really tough on Rebecca because she's such a people person. And then we had our little routine where we got, you know, typically go for little walks, and we still go for walks because she's not a homebody. She needs out. And this is you know, she's the child who's asking me every day about, she's naming names, you know, teachers' names, you know, I want to go to school, where's my bus, like she's the child with the coat on, ready to go out, like, at, you know, 7 a.m., and her bus would come at 7:40 every morning, and so she had, like, such a great routine, and extreme routine is everything for Rebecca, I've had to sort of adjust and put in a new routine, but to be honest, it's hit and miss. It's not, it's impossible, you know, like you.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. It's just like not realistic right now. You know what I mean? And I think like for all parents in general, you know, right now the schedules and the routines, it's just
thrown out the window. Right?
And you know, we're all like, just kind of in survival mode.
And it's interesting because the youngest of a 13-year-old, like, not that I don't want to be hard on myself and say that I'm failing, but in some ways I feel I'm kind of like, I'm not coming down, I'm not strict on anyone right now. It's kind of like, you know, the younger one is sleeping in a lot, and it's like, I'm not really, being tough about anything on those lines, because I'm more wanting to pick my battles and have as much contentment as possible, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's the healthiest thing that you can do for you right now is to pick your battles, you know? Because like I said, like we're all just in survival mode. And if you're like stressing yourself out even more so on top of, you know, all the stressors that are going on in the world.
Yes.
Eventually, like mom's going to have a meltdown. And then what?
We
got to just like keep our cups kind of full.
Our calmness and our contentment is what we got to try and like fight to hold on to, right?
It's definitely hard, though.
And it's tough because teenagers, you know, like so I feel like I've got other kids on completely different time zones. And then I've got Rebecca, the one that's like never going to sleep in, you know?
Right.
But the positive about that is Rebecca, she's not wandering the house in the night right now. She's not waking, like she's got a good sleeping routine. So I'm really thankful for that. But I think in some ways it's interesting that every family member goes in waves, and some days it's my challenges are other kids, you know, like it's just, you know, there'll be another kid who's like, you know, up in the night
like,
getting a snack in the middle of the night. Oh my gosh, it's like it's definitely very different. And what's interesting about this whole experience is the world is really getting a taste of what it's like for individuals living with severe anxiety, social anxiety, and other physical conditions, like what it's like for them when they are having to socially isolate themselves and the pain of that. Like it actually is painful in some ways to, you know, not have that predictability and that sense of, I don't want to say normal, but the control and the norms that, you know, like we rely so much on certain things being there for us and certain freedoms and just like, you know, just being able to go for a walk and stop in a coffee shop or, you know, stop wherever we want. And because I think that's where I've been fortunate with Rebecca is I've really worked at just, even though we have the special needs stroller and we have a child that's has a lot of balance issues and issues with severe ADHD and you know, have certain things that you have to manage, I still get out. Like I refuse to be the parent who's going to hide at home and let others get to me, if that makes sense. Yeah. And there is still a sense of judgment out there, and there's still, unfortunately, and I don't mean that to sound judgmental of others, but I feel that it's important to try and have everyone exposed to as much of the regular world as possible, on their terms for what works for them. Obviously it's very different with a child that's, you know, with severe social anxiety, that, you know, you have to manage that differently, but in terms of like a child like Rebecca, like just because she's different and has more challenges than someone who's a little bit more physically abled or has more speech ability, we are, you know, I recognize that she's very social and that she loves going shopping, and she's, you know, a girly girl that likes the bracelets and no one loves the drugstore as much as she does, and no one is as sort of chatty to people. You know, like it's kind of interesting that she's,
God love her.
You know, she know it's like, yeah, there's certain people in the community that don't know my name, but they right. know Becca. And it's like, you know, and it's like, you know, I'm her mom, you know, like we're regulars at certain places and, yeah. and that kind of thing. And so
you have to take her on a shopping like trip when this
not,
is all over.
I'm not such of a social person.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, we just need maximum people in her life. And I've realized that I can't always, I'm not really enough for her, if that makes sense. Like I realize yeah. that she needs other people. Like she loves her respite worker. Like, you know, she has yeah. like a one-on-one worker at an after-school program a little bit. And she needs all this, you know, so.
And I think that this is just like really such a normal, I just think that it's such a normal thing, like as a human being, that you have all these different people in your yes. life that meet these different needs. And I think that it's, you know, yeah. unique to this experience right now exactly. where you're being like shut away from these people and those needs aren't being met. And that's like where we're kind of all like, I don't know, coming unglued a little bit. Like, I need my people.
Yes.
I know.
It's a shock.
It is.
It's
it
a
is.
Shock. It really is. It's
so, like Anne, is there any...
like, we do get out... Yes.
Is there any
So I guess basically the whole issue of autism awareness and acceptance, I see my role as being just like trying to share, trying to offer a little bit of emotional support, upliftment, but also trying to get the message across that there is a like acceptance is important. Like everyone wants to be included in a way that works for them, you know, and it's just, and I feel that it's, that we need a little bit more of a sense of understanding of one another and realizing that things that might look very different, yes, they are still, they're different, but it's not, at the end of the day, we are all pretty much wanting the same thing. We all want connection in some way. We all want to be included and accepted for who we are. I posted something which I couldn't resist. It was on Instagram and it was a Facebook, a zebra, and it said something to the effect that my stripes may be different, but my heart still beats the same.
I just
love that because that's basically the truth. We're all, you know, basically equals, you know.
Yeah. So, no, definitely.
And you know, it's a little bit like life is challenging for everyone, and I think that at the forefront of my mind is the fact that there are other people going through other things, like, you know, caregiving for their elderly parents or like the children with other medical conditions. And it's just like we are all dealing with, like, we can't judge what's going on behind someone's front door. We don't know what others are dealing with, and I just feel we just gotta support one another a little bit more, be a little bit more open-minded and give one another a little bit more grace and just be a little kinder in general. Not that I want to lecture, but it's very easy, I think, to go on social media and vent out your stress in a negative way. But yeah. it's so much better just to be to look at what we have in common and sort of just try and support one another as mothers and parents and families. And I don't want to forget about the siblings. Like, there are some really amazing siblings out there that are doing a lot of good work for the autism community. And you know, it's just, we need to sort of get through this time and hopefully life gets back to normal and we'll all have like the biggest Christmas celebrations ever. And
I can't
hopefully
wait
we'll get to connect with our families a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's gonna be insane, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, it really is.
Different. But yeah.
Well, Anne, you are just so inspiring and so uplifting, and I am so thankful that you joined me today. Where can my listeners and followers find you?
I guess I spend most of my time at, I just love Instagram. Yeah. I'm a little, I love the quick connection. I think it's very, mostly very positive. So it's at Autism Supermoms, all one word. I have a public Facebook page, Autism Supermoms. And I've got a WordPress website, and all my activities are on hold because I need a little bit more like technical help. and I need to find time. But a lot of the stuff that is my content is too lengthy for Instagram. So I want to be able to post more topic related things on a WordPress website. But I've kind of, everything, life is on hold because the, you know, life is dealing with real life as much as possible right now. So.
Yeah, no, I totally am with.
Well, Anne, thank you again for joining me. I hope everybody goes over and finds you on Instagram. That's where you and I like to hang out. And you can find me on Instagram at Mimosas with Moms, on Facebook at Mimosas with Moms, and you can email me at the2mimosamoms@gmail.com. I'm also going to be linking some other fun autism related things to the bottom of this episode. So make sure that you go check out the details if you're interested in that. And cheers to Autism Awareness Month.
Yes, you too. We'll talk to you soon. Have a good day. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.